Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Today for the podcast, we have two guests in two different countries. Joining us today from Copenhagen is Vigilanza Abbasi. Dr. Abbasi is assistant professor at Maastricht University in the Netherlands. And then joining us from London is Mary Inman, who's a partner at the law firm Constantine & Cannon, which is known for its QITAM work. Dr. Abbasi, Mary, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you for having me, Adam.
Yes, thank you, Adam. Delight to be on your program.
Well, great to have you both, and great to have you both speaking at the 2020 European Compliance and Ethics Institute. Now, you're going to be talking at that conference about the new EU Whistleblower Directive, and I think it's a great topic what we'll be talking about here today. Dr. Abbasi, can you first give us an overview of what the new EU Whistleblower Directive says?
Yes, so the new European law sets out the most effective standards, or aims to set out some of the most effective standards and raise the bar globally on how whistleblowers should be protected. I think for our listeners, there are three particular features that are worth emphasizing of the directive. Starting with the very first basic question of who does it protect? What's very important about the directive is that it has a very wide scope of people that it covers. So it covers self-employed individuals, volunteers, paid or unpaid trainees, contractors, subcontractors, former workers. And in this sense, it's really important and wide, which was also an issue to make sure that the protection are as wide as possible. The second question, the second feature is what does it cover in terms of what kind of areas do we see? Because as we know, in many countries, including in the US, and also this was the case in European countries, protection is fragmented or narrow or only covering one sector and not everything. In this case, the European directive covers everything from financial services, product safety, the internal market, tax avoidance issues, protections of the environment, and in short, quite frankly, there isn't a significant policy area to which this directive would not apply. And then lastly, the important aspect is the reporting channels, or how can an individual report? This must be said was one of the tension points even when we were having the discussion about the legislation, because there are certain member states that are more focused on making sure that workers first and foremost report within their companies, organizations. But however, the Commission did follow through an approach that civil society also fought hard to make sure that the standard is a best standard for the whistleblower. So in this regard, the whistleblower can report internally, but they can also report externally to relevant authorities and competent bodies, which of course can be very different in each member state. Some have, like for example, we see in the Netherlands, already dedicated houses of whistleblowers. Others, like Germany, still don't have any protections or specific authorities that they individuals could resort to. And lastly, when it comes to media, which is a very tenuous point in terms of can the whistleblower go directly to the media, there are strings attached to this direct reporting to the media. However, an individual doing so following the procedure set out in the directive would also be eligible to be protected. And I guess an important element to all of these things to add is that there are really clear penalties for noncompliance. So any institution or individual that hinders reporting, or that there's retaliations against whistleblowers, would face penalties. And I think that's very important from a perspective of implementation, because having good standards is one thing, but having teeth to this directive and making sure that it really can bite in terms of making sure it can be implemented correctly, that's also very important, which the directive ensures.
Now, Mary, does it differ in any way from the US model, which, you know, people are more familiar with?
So, Adam, the way that the American programs differ from the European directive is that the American programs seek to provide a channel for insiders, typically inside employees, with information about potential wrongdoing, to bring that information to the government agencies and allow them to act upon it. So it is a place where whistleblowers who I think under the European system are confused about what government agencies can they go to. In the United States, there's a clear path either under the QICAM laws where the whistleblower is empowered to bring a lawsuit and basically be deputized as a private attorney general to bring the lawsuit in the government's name, or in the case of the agency programs, to serve as a TIF and provide vital information to the SEC, CFTC, IRS, and the Department of Transportation, all of whom are welcoming whistleblowers, to give them information that will help them basically put them on the scent of the trail of wrongdoing.
So if I may add, Adam, I fully agree to Mary's point on the importance of the reporting bodies and channels and making sure that these exist. I think one thing to really add is the context in which this directive came about, and that is that many member states actually did not have at all any protection for whistleblowers, including big states like Germany or other states like Luxembourg. Although they might have had laws, they were very narrow and only covering certain sectors. So going from that context of many members of the European Union not having any protection or not sufficient protection, to having something that requires companies across the union, even with 50 employees and higher, to have reporting channels is a really important progress. Furthermore, also when it comes to public authorities, even at a national, local level, municipal level, for municipalities with 10,000 inhabitants and above, they're also obliged to have reporting channels. So having these obligations for companies and also authorities to have reporting channels is a significant step forward in terms of protecting and ensuring that the reporting can occur.
That's interesting. I mean, it is quite the large expansion there. Now, in the past, whistleblowing efforts have been affected by privacy rights. Many feel that the privacy laws are making whistleblowing and the subsequent investigations more difficult. We just actually did a podcast showed that a lot of this was more myth than reality. But how does this the directive address this? And regardless, what should compliance teams be doing to make sure that they don't run afoul of privacy restrictions?
Indeed, privacy is one of the most important questions that we're raising, and we do traditionally see some tension here. But I think it's important to draw the distinctions, what we see legally and what we can expect in practice. So from a legal standpoint, the directive does try to, as much as possible, take into account the fact that and not be in conflict with privacy protection. So, for example, it specifically says that it will not conflict with what can be known as traditional regimes of confidentiality, such as medical privacy or client-lawyer privileges. But on the other hand, it does also require member states to place adequate protection procedures. Now, what does that mean? For example, one element of that is that the identity of the whistleblower, including the persons implicated in the reporting, as well as third persons that might be included in those reports, say witnesses, colleagues, or other individuals, would be protected. The personal data should be protected throughout all stages in the whistleblowing procedure foreseen in the directive. Furthermore, before the adoption of the directive, the European Data Protection Supervisory was consulted. We can see this also in the preamble of the directive. And there's many mentions, both in the article, for example, Article 17 of the directive, but also throughout the preamble of where are the synergies of the two pieces of legislation. Especially with the GDPR, this is important because the GDPR itself foresees a limitation of privacy or data when it comes to other freedoms, and obviously freedom of expression, whistleblowing being one such freedom which the directive sets out to protect. Now, as I said, we can see a distinction here between practice and law, and I do expect to be seeing more challenges in the implementation. And that's also simply for the fact that the GDPR, too, is a very fresh legislation, and there are many elements there that companies and authorities are still trying to figure out. as we can see increasingly also from the case law of the European Court of Justice. So definitely there is an expectation, I would imagine, that this for companies would be actually a tenuous point and something that they would have to pay more attention as we're still trying to see in practice how these procedures will play out.
Now, Mary, as a result of this directive, how should compliance teams be thinking about their efforts to encourage employees to come forward and report wrongdoing?
That's a great question. I think there's a real opportunity here for compliance officers to do some really fundamental work, some spade work, in changing the mindset within their organizations about how we view whistleblowers. There's been some really exciting academic research coming out of George Washington University and the University of Utah that I think will really help compliance officers and aiding in this mental shift for their companies. The research comes from Kyle Welch of George Washington and Professor Stevens of the University of Utah. They actually were given access to a data set of one of the largest compliance internal compliance hotline providers. And the data shows something that a lot of us have known intuitively, that is companies that have active internal reporting hotlines, ones where their employees feel safe to speak up about any level of issue, actually has a positive effect on the bottom line. In other words, whistleblowers are good for business. And here's how. The research shows that when you have an actively used internal reporting mechanism, those companies see fewer lawsuits. And of the lawsuits that do come, there are fewer penalties or lower penalties for the government. So I think the more we can get out the message about this research that shows that not only are whistleblowers not to be seen as rats or snitches, but they are actually good for your bottom line, I think in that way we can make some real progress and headway within companies about seeing them as allies and not villains. The other piece that's really exciting as well is we're starting to see some great work and innovative work being done in the education that we do of companies. And there's two real leaders, thought leaders in the space. A woman, a former whistleblower herself named Wendy Addison, has been pushing. She studied social behavioral science at Stanford and is talking a lot about how we have courageous conversations. And both her and a professor from DePaul, Kelly Pope, from DePaul University, are really trying to encourage compliance officers to train their employees through experiential learning, actually putting on a VR headset and engaging in could you speak up and how would you do it and what are the barriers and impediments. So I think we're at a time right now with some really exciting innovators in this space, and there's also some great technology coming online with two-way anonymous reporting and other things that may allow a very reluctant whistleblower to use a hotline and ultimately engender the trust of the organization by way of an anonymous back and forth. So it's an exciting time, I think, and I'm hopeful that we're going to embark on getting to a place where we normalize whistleblowing, where whistleblowing is just an everyday act and it isn't seen as an act of courage or bravery or an act of treachery, but instead is just part of doing your job.
Indeed, I fully echo Mary's point here in terms of normalizing what whistleblowing means and moving away from this idea of traitors or heroes. And I just would like to add here that we saw this difficulty even when it comes to the language, because in many member states, even the word whistleblower in a national language was actually a negative word of a traitor or a snitch. Hence, it takes, which is understandable to some extent from countries, especially in Eastern Europe, where we're reporting on your neighbor is sort of the background under which these places function. However, it's very important to really change not only the law, but to move forward in changing also the culture in Europe and globally, whether it's within companies and externally, in terms of how important whistleblowing is for better business management and better resources and compliance, rather than only seeing whistleblowing as a harmful or lack of loyalty, as sometimes it's viewed.
It's a difficult topic, and it's always going to be. And Unfortunately, it's also difficult having an endless conversation. It's been fascinating. Well, I want to thank you both for taking the time to talk to us from your corners of the world, and thank you for coming to the 2020 European Compliance and Ethics Institute, which, by the way, will be taking place in Amsterdam from the 16th to the 18th of March next year. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.